Mr. Doug Fry, Reel 7. Now, we're talking about these typical bombing raids, which, for the sake of this, we've assumed with the Hamburg and possibly the Essen raid. It's yes. not any one raid, it's a sort of amalgam of what yes. would happen on the raid.
Yes, quite. Yes.
Now, you're on your way back, and you've drunk your coffee. We're talking about that. And as you get near England, what's the next thing that happened? I mean, was there a particular concentration due to the risk of being attacked on landing?
Yes.
Was that a known risk?
That was an absolute known risk. And more than once, we've been in the circuit waiting to land. And when we've had the call come through from the WAF in the control tower, who's giving us instructions to land, to call out bandits, all the lights would go out on the airfield and to give us an altitude to fly at. Well, so we all sheared off, those of us still in the air, sheared off until we got the recall. So there was always a danger.
I presume they couldn't stay there long because of fuel problems. The fighters.
Exactly.
The German fighters.
That's right. That's true. But nevertheless, they did follow the stream in and shoot some of our chaps down. But when there were bandits about, we were told, and so we cleared off until we got the recall back.
And what about the landing or anything?
Well, as we approached the coast, all the crews, but the skippers, would start calling in, and you could hear. And if they could call in, the sooner they called in, they could get turned to land, maybe 1, 2, and 3. And we had one particular guy, a squadron leader, who had a high pitched voice. This guy, and he'd been an ex farmer, forget his name at the moment. And he used to call in right at the extreme range of the RT. So a faint voice, and he always had some excuse for coming in, and he always got in first. He always beat everybody in, and they said, right, you can come straight in. He never got in the queue. That was his ploy. But then you'd hear everybody else calling in, call signs, and then you get your turn to land, you see.
What about the landing?
And then, well, we get over to the airfield, and a lovely WAF voice we would call in, and a lovely WAF voice would acknowledge and tell us our turn to land. We'd say, let's say 14. So we'd be in the circuit, and we'd wait for her to tell us to wheels and flaps down and pancake. And then you could start to relax then. So the skipper would come in, plonk her down, taxi out to the our dispersal.
The dispersal area. Was this a set area?
Yes, yeah. Set area with we had a bell tent at each. So we stayed there all day. We used to spend all day at the dispersal with our ground crew.
And what would happen when you got out?
We'd get out of the aircraft, get a lift back to the briefing room. The briefing room was on the side of a flight hangar at Mildenhall, and we would sit round the table, and we'd get a mug of coffee from the WAF. She had an urn there, dishing out coffee for us, and then we'd sit down, and the debriefing officer, we used to be called interrogation in those days, and we'd all sit down and tell our stories.
One crew at a time, or all
together? Yeah, well, there'd be several tables in there, and several officers, interrogation officers.
And who was being debriefed? All of you, or was there any? I mean, would there be much for you to do? What was the
sort of... we'd all have our say. If we saw anything in particular, for example, we might interject and say, yes, I saw an explosion, what colour it was and everything, red or whatever, and what colour smoke.
Would you have kept notes then of things you saw?
No, just up
just
here.
Just remember it?
Just so remembered it.
You after wouldn't sort of log it with a time?
No, the skipper map, the navigator would have logged anything
so you'd
specific.
Have reported... on the internet, it was the navigator's job to write down.
Yeah, but the interrogation officer would be writing all this down, you see, from every member of the crew. Yeah, we all had our say.
Was there any analysis of how well anybody had done or not done?
No, the photographs would be up next morning in the bombing section, and we'd go and have a look and see how we'd done.
Would you? I mean, how clear were they? I've seen a couple of them, but yeah. I mean, you can actually see.
They were quite clear, and they could be deciphered by the intelligence people.
Now, after
you see how well we did in relation to the aim. There was an aiming point, you see.
And how well did you used to do in relation to the aiming point? I mean, was your an accurate crew?
I think we were jolly good, yes. I think we were. I think we had a good crew. Mm.
Now, after debriefing, what then?
Then we'd go to breakfast, have our egg, bacon.
That was a traditional breakfast.
That was traditional, yeah. That's the old joke, wasn't it? If you don't come back, can I have your egg?
Had you had such a meal before you went as well? I forgot.
No, we had normal tea as far as I can recall.
But you had a special
yeah.
breakfast.
Yeah, that's it. Yes. Yeah.
And then what? Would you go to sleep or
go back to the billet and go to bed? So we didn't get much. I mean, at the time I was operating, which was in the summer, I suppose we got back to the billet perhaps about 8 o'clock. About 8 o'clock in the morning, something like that. So we'd have a couple of hours sleep, really. And then around about 11 o'clock, I suppose, we'd bowl down to, if we'd had our sort of early breakfast, if you like. So if we couldn't sleep very well, we'd get up and then just go down to the briefing room again. Not to the briefing room, the flights again. And see what's going on down there. Yeah, that's right.
Now, let's look at the raids one by one then on right. Hamburg. I mean, just to say, now, the first one was on the night of the 24th, 25th of July.
Yes.
Now, do you remember much about that first raid?
Yes, I do, very much so. The usual time was, I suppose, 8 o'clock briefing. Maximum effort, went to briefing, and when in the briefing there were arc lights up, Klieg lights, I think they were called, the film people, and obviously they were going to do this, doing something about this film that we'd been told about. So we bowled in there, and we knew that Hamburg was coming up, but we didn't know it was this night. And so when the curtain went back and we saw the red tape, it was going to Hamburg. There were cameramen in the briefing room, filming the briefing, and so it was Hamburg. And that night was the very
first... So this was the first part of the filming of the biter bit?
Well, that was the last bit, actually, more or less the last scenes of it, yes.
Right.
Yes.
But this isn't the raid where you were filmed?
I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, I'm jumped well ahead. No, I'm sorry
right,
about
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. So the first raid on Hamburg.
Stop that. First raid on Hamburg. So, the tape went to Hamburg. So that's Hamburg. We're going to start now. We'd already been told by Butch that we were going to do these. So this was it. And so we were briefed in the usual manner. Hamburg at the time was said to have been the most heavily defended city in Germany. So we thought we were going to be in for it. But we were using, for the very first time, we were using window.
Now what was window? Explain about you.
The window was strips of foil, which of a certain length, which would reflect the wavelength of the German radar, so that it messed up their radar.
Now, had you practiced with this?
No, we knew nothing about it, until we were going to use it that night. We hadn't even seen it being delivered. Not that anybody was looking for it to be delivered.
Did anybody tell you how you used it, though? I mean,
No. Well, only then at the briefing.
And how were you to use it?
So the wireless operator and the flight engineer on our squadron were the ones to chuck it out in turn. They took turns in doing it. We started windowing at a certain position, a certain number of packets per minute.
Were the packets open, or did they open?
No, they were loaded into the aircraft in brown paper packets, which were opened by the chaps who were going to do it, whip it out. They were put it, and then they were taken out these strips. They were lamp blacked on one side, and on the Stirling, on our squadron, they were put out. There was a port, a small port on the starboard side, just rear of the main plane, for the starter rack cable, and they were put out there. A stopwatch was hung on the bulkhead, and because it was done all very precisely, and they were thrown out at intervals, certain intervals from a certain position on the way in, and then as we got near and over the target, they increased the number that were shoved out. And then, having left the target, hopefully, and on the way home, then you stopped windowing at another certain position on the way home.
And this, the Hamburg raid of the 24th, 25th of
July, was the very first time we used it.
Did it seem to make a difference?
It was absolutely stunning. I could not believe it when we got to Hamburg. We'd been told it was the most heavily defended city, because the searchlights were almost down at ground level, wafting about. And also, what guns were firing were quite aimless, very weak Barrett stuff, because they couldn't. Their radar screens were completely messed up, and they recorded. The Germans reckoned that 40,000 aircraft bombed Hamburg that night, because they just couldn't. It was absolute mess. Their radar screens were an absolute mess, and out of over 700 airplanes that night, we lost only 12. And they were plotted to have been caught on the periphery of the stream, been off course, and they've been picked off. So you can imagine, only 12 out of over 700 aircraft. It was incredible. It's unbelievable. It really was. And of course, when we got back,
Do you remember anything about that first raid when you got over, other than the absence of real AA?
It was a brilliant raid. We were third wave, but this time, we, apart from our incendiaries, we carried a 2,000-pound bomb, just one 2,000-pounder, and the mate weight was our usual incendiaries. So we whacked all that down. The fires were going like hell when we got there. It was an extremely good raid, that first one was.
And you could see that the target was being hit. What could you see of Hamburg?
Yeah, because by now the fires were so great, you couldn't see much, because the docks were there. So there were ships in the docks. All that lot went, all the warehouses were going up, but now and again there'd be explosions, presumably oil tanks going up, and a big blossoming of explosion. And of course the smoke, as usual, was up to thousands of feet already, and it was an absolute mass of flames. So that was brilliant, and of course, there was nothing happening to the aircraft over the target at all, because of this incredible window. So that was brilliant. So of course we were absolutely beside ourselves with delight at debriefing to report this brilliant window stuff, these little strips of foil, tin foil, absolutely amazing. Anyway,
and the next raid then was over Essen.
Well, the next we were
that's the 25th, 26th. Yeah, the next night, isn't it?
The next night we were also went down there. We were on the battle order again. Hamburg was the primary target, but because of the Americans had gone the next morning after us as well, they had problems there because of the smoke. So we didn't go back again that night. Because of the smoke, so we went to the secondary target, which was Essen. Now that also is heavily defended, obviously, in the Ruhr. That was the target in the Ruhr. So off we went to Essen. This time the window, incredibly, although it was up to that point, they reckoned it was the best raid ever on Essen, because it was oboe marked, which was of course was the PFF.
Can you explain that? Sorry.
Well, oboe was also a navigational aid, worked on the OBOE, that's the code name for it. That was also on intersecting beams. and they intersect. That was a fairly short range thing, actually, but ideal for the Ruhr. The beams would intersect thus over the Ruhr, and then the PFF, when they got the blip, they would, the PFF mosquitoes, when they got the blip, they would drop the markers. So it was a very accurate way of marking, and that was a very accurately marked target that night, Essen. So,
the oboe was used by the mosquitoes, the pathfinders. And what do you remember of the raid as far as you were concerned on Essen? I know it was Hamburg, really, but I mean, yeah. Essen was all it.
Yeah, well, Essen, of course, it was a bit stomach churning because it was in the Ruhr and we knew it was heavily defended, all the Krupps works and all that was there. But nevertheless, we still had a good trip. It was accurately marked, and it was an excellent raid. And once more, we did our business, and we got back safely. Nothing happened whatsoever.
Now, the next thing is another raid on Hamburg. And this one was the 27th of July.
Yes. Did we have a stand-down one? We had a stand-down one night that week.
The night before.
Yeah. So we had a stand-down then. It was a bit of a relief. And then off we go again, briefing the next day, Hamburg again. So we thought, well, this would be all right. The window, although the window didn't work as well over Essen for some reason, they very soon got on top of, well, almost on top of it, the Germans.
What do you mean? Even this early, by the third?
Yes, they had. They began to sort out the images on their screens from the snow, as it was. But the second Hamburg was also brilliant. In fact, there's a note on the operation sheet by one or two of the crews, better than before, they say, better than the last one or whatever. And this was the night that the Germans called the firestorm. That's when the first firestorm occurred.
And what do you remember of that raid yourself? Anything that marked it out?
Yes, it was once more the fires were incredibly fierce. You couldn't see a black spot amongst this huge sheet of flame, covered acres and acres.
Did you realise it was a firestorm?
We didn't know it was a firestorm then.
Did you know what a firestorm was?
No, that was a German. The Germans coined that phrase.
Well, you didn't know what it was.
No, all we knew is that the target was well alight, and it was, in other words, we were having a good operation. We did get caught in searchlights after we'd bombed. I think it was after, or maybe whilst we were bombing. Anyway, it wasn't a master beam. It was just fortuitous. A few lights caught us, but there was no flak came up, and we did our usual drill of getting out of a searchlight with a hard diving port. I think we did a diving port to starboard, and the skipper called out with some delight. We did 360 miles an hour on the clock. Not bad for the old Stirling, was it?
So you just evaded this.
So we got out of the searchlights, back into the dark sky, and made our way home. And so that was another successful Hamburg.
So the next one is the third one was on the 27th. The 29th, sorry, yeah.
That was the third one. Now, that was also very good. No problems. Saw the aircraft going down, the usual thing, really.
So, already they really had, as far as you were concerned, got on top of the problem.
Not 100%, because window was used right through the war, not only by us, but the Americans coined the phrase chaff for it, and of course it's still used today, chaff. We were getting back to our sort of normal pro rata losses, if you like.
So it wasn't just the searchlights flat, not much of a barrage.
No, they were now sort of operating almost normally, but obviously we were giving them problems. So it was still working.
So what do you remember of the actual bombing run on the 29th?
The bombing run was straightforward. We bombed on our markers. And as I say, we got caught in some searchlights.
This is the third raid?
No, I'm talking about the first. That was the second one I've just spoken about. The third one was fine. Again, we got to the target without any problems. Because this our flights out to Hamburg were across the sea, North Sea, roughly parallel to the Dutch coast, but not very close there too. And then there was a turning point as you got close to the Elbe. There were in fact yellow markers went down as a turning point, which I always thought was a bit strange, because if the Germans cottoned on to that as being a turning point, which was illuminated with a yellow marker, they could have their fighters circling around there, and I'm sure they did. But nevertheless, that a turning point was marked, so that everybody knew where exactly to turn, and then follow the Elbe up to Hamburg, because Hamburg is more or less up about 30 miles up the Elbe, as London is up the Thames. So we did our usual business there, came out.
Again, what was the result? Could you see, was it on fire again?
Once more, there was an absolute sea of flame and explosions going on. And in fact, the night before, and also this the third one, we could see the fires when we were 80 miles out to sea or more. So you can imagine how fierce it all was, and what tremendous effect our raids were having.
Now, I have to ask: did you have any problems with what you were doing, in the sense that, you know, when you started fires and explosions like that, you're going to be killing people?
Absolutely.
I understand. I mean, I just want you to comment on this: what you felt about that? Well, the Germans underneath it, basically.
Yes. No, I didn't. I was doing what I wanted to do. And if you can say enjoying it, then yes, I was enjoying it, to be honest. I mean, after all, we were over the German skies, we were fighting a battle. We weren't just whipping in against a poor, defenceless nation. We were going into very extremely sophisticated and heavy defences, as our losses will illustrate. So, no, I hadn't. No, having gone through the Blitz in London and known what before we'd laid a glove on the Germans, really, we were being bombed, and also our cities were being burnt and buildings destroyed and so on. So no, I was doing what I wanted to do, to be honest, and I suspect that everybody else was. They'd all volunteered to do aircrew anyway, and all got posted to bomb work. So I can't really see where anybody would have any problem.
It didn't worry you particularly, or indeed at all?
No, because I thought, well, to me, that was what we were doing. This is what I wanted to do. The bite a bit. I mean, I think that really explains it all, the title of that film that they made, The Bite a Bit. And as Butch said, they sowed the wind, and they're going to reap the whirlwind. And that, to me, was what they were doing. I was taking part in that, and what we were doing, I could see, because of the fires and the explosions going on the target, allotted target, that was exactly what I wanted to do. And we were doing it. And I was part of it. So you don't think, well, I certainly didn't. I knew people were on the ground, because just like they were on the ground in London and Liverpool and Coventry and places like that, and Warsaw and Rotterdam, so there were people there. So obviously you'd be an idiot if you didn't know there were people on the ground. But that was war, and I was taking part in it. I'd been asked to take part in it, and that's what I was doing. I'd chosen to do it.
Now, on your way back from the third Hamburg raid, you did have a bit of a scrap. Well, not a, a brush.
Well, yes. It was very interesting. We were about two-thirds of the way home, half or two-thirds of the way home, roughly a similar course, parallel to the Dutch coast. And Bill Wells, our wireless operator, used to like to tune in, if he could, fiddle about with his knobs on his wireless and tune into the German wavelengths. And we were bowling along nicely, having done the Hamburg job. And Bill said, listen to this. And he put it through to the intercom, and we could hear the defence people in Holland, because they had the defensive belt right across Europe, talking to a fighter.
Because yeah, they could you tell? Who could tell what it was? Because you know, German's German, you know.
Well, Bill, you could tell, because there wouldn't be any other chatter, you see. And so it was pretty certain that that's what we were listening to. So he listened to this chapter, and he put it through the intercom, and the voices got louder and louder as the aircraft got closer to us. And because they were vectoring, they used to vector, pick us up on the radar, pick an aircraft up on the radar, and then vector the nearest fighter to us, you see, to whatever aircraft they'd picked up. It happened to be our turn. So he said, listen to this. So we were already, Ken and I were already searching our eyeballs out, and so we really had to start looking in the direction of the Dutch coast, really, because obviously that's where the threat was coming from. And lo and behold, these voices got louder and louder, so it was obvious it was getting closer, and we were getting more ittier in the seat. And then a fighter flare came down almost on top of us, and slightly to starboard, and I was unsighted, unfortunately, and as we said, well, we knew something was going to happen, but this fighter flare coming down, been dropped on us, and then lo and behold, a Junkers 88 made its appearance. So Ken sighted on it. I couldn't get my sights onto it because of the tailplane. So I suggested to Ken, he gave the thing gave this Junkers 88 a burst, let him know that we were awake. So he gave him a long burst, which fell short. I remember seeing the tracers going down, and he didn't fire at us. He didn't make any move to change direction, to point at us, as it were. I couldn't understand this, and he flew right past his own flare. By this time, the flare had dropped a bit, and he flew past it and illuminated himself. Brilliant target for us. So he must have been a Sprog pilot, I reckon, or got the wind up very quickly, because he sheared off. He just sheared off after that long burst from Ken, and the fighter flare went down into there was a sea mist at the time, and it went down there and disappeared, and we just continued on our way. So that was a rather a strange episode, really. And I asked myself, did he drop the flare and then drop down behind it, or was he working with somebody else who dropped the flare on us up above? But if so, why didn't he come in and attack us as well? So it was very peculiar, but I'm jolly glad that he did clear off, quite frankly. I don't like tangling with a Junkers 88.
Anything else happened on that trip, on the way back, or was that it?
No, that was it. That was it. So it was a gasp of relief all round, really.